Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the post-match podcast brought to you by the Liverpool Echo in association with our sponsors NordVPN and Liverpool. They're back on top of the Premier League, as you'd expect after playing Premier League strugglers Sheffield United. 3-1 victory here tonight, thanks to goals from Nunes, McAllister and Cody Gakpo. But I only told half the story. Joining me again, as always, it's only Matt Addison. Matt, they had to work hard for it, didn't they? Like, it was one of those games where Liverpool were in control from start to finish, but it looked like they were going to be frustrated in front of goal. Then Sheffield United equalise out of nowhere. And they really needed the crowd to get them over the line at the end there.
Yeah, it was a special goal, wasn't it, from McAllister, which I'm sure we'll go into more detail on shortly. But I think it was a slightly surprising performance, I think, from Liverpool. I think that there was a little bit of chat, certainly on social media, about Liverpool maybe racking up a few goals and trying to get the goal difference up. But in the end, I think it was just a relief, really, around Anfield that they've managed to get the job done at all, because they did dominate, they did control, which I think we've come to expect from Liverpool against any opponent, but certainly, you know, the worst team in the league this season, you'd expect that to be the case. But Liverpool just didn't have loads of shots on goal. Obviously, the first goal comes from good work from Nunes to sort of close down the goalkeeper and force that mistake. But it didn't really feel after that they were peppering the goal and putting shot after shot and really feeling like they were going to go two goals up. You could see, you know, Jurgen Klopp was a little bit frustrated on the sidelines, and you always run that risk, really, of conceding that goal at the other end. So it wasn't a perfect performance, but it was one where Liverpool have got the job done. And as you said at the top there, Liverpool are back on top of the Premier League. I'm sure if Manchester City and Pep Guardiola or Arsenal and Mikel Arteta decided to tune in and watch this game tonight, they were probably wondering for a while, maybe it could be one where Liverpool drop points. But ultimately, they've come out on top again, and the Reds have got that job done and got themselves over the line.
Just a reminder that we are live on Facebook and YouTube, so get your comments in. And if you've got any questions or want to say you're your man of the match or anything like that, we'll try and get through to them at some point during the broadcast. You mentioned Man City there. And it's got a feel where Liverpool have lost out on the Premier League title to them by a point on two occasions. And both occasions, Liverpool were the side doing the chasing. Both occasions, you're just waiting for City to drop points, hoping that the drop points and it wouldn't come. They'd find a way to get these comebacks. They'd find a way to get these late winners. I don't want to speak too early, as there's still a lot of games left to play. But is it a roles reversal here? Do Liverpool have the bottle to go all the way and win this league?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've seen that tonight. I think we are going to see a couple more nervy moments. I think there will be nervy moments on Sunday at Old Trafford for Liverpool against Manchester United. I think there'll be nervy moments in almost every game from now to the end of the season. But that's the job, isn't it? That's the position that they are in. And that is the crucial difference this time compared to the other title races that Liverpool have been in. They've got themselves ahead this time. It's not the case that they're going to need somebody else to drop points. This time it's Manchester City and Arsenal, of course, who want that to be the case. So I think Pep Guardiola spoke about it after City won yesterday. He said basically that he doesn't expect Liverpool to drop too many points. I think that's, you know, natural. That's a given at this stage. I think all three of the teams may drop points, but I don't think could bet, you know, against any of them really in any remaining fixture. They're going to be, you know, heavy favourites. It's just a case of, can they manage to get themselves through that pressure and get themselves over the line? And Liverpool have today, as you say, this was the easiest of the remaining tests. There's still eight more of these to go, and they're all going to be probably harder than what Sheffield United have done. Some of them are going to be away from home, which I think is going to be interesting as well. But it's just about that nerve, isn't it, I think, for Liverpool. If the three teams who are in this title race do drop points, I think it's going to be massive which ones drop first. If Liverpool had dropped points first today, that would have felt like a big psychological influence. If Manchester City go to Crystal Palace on Saturday lunchtime and drop points then, suddenly that's a massive boost for Arsenal against Brighton and obviously Liverpool then the next day. So, you know, if one of these teams drops points, it's going to be interesting to see which one it is first. But for Liverpool, it's a bit of a cliche, but it is true. They've just got to go keep going game by game, keep winning, and, you know, we'll see where they end up. But they're absolutely in the position that they would want to be. And I think ultimately that's probably the most important thing.
I'll try and paint the pitch now for our viewers of the goals. The first one, Nunes, he closes down the goalkeeper. The keeper tries to clear it. He just kicks it straight into Nunes. It goes in off his backside. It is as fortuitous a strike as you're going to get. The cliche is when a striker's not having a bit of luck, he needs to go off his bum. And Nunes has got that today. It just so happens it's when he's actually in a good bit of form. But as lucky as that is, the McAllister strike, my word. We've got a comment here from Still Gunnan saying it is an absolute screamer. It's football eroticism. And he's not far wrong. Think Steven Gerrard, Olympiacos, 2005, but a little bit closer. It comes to him, edge of the box, and it is an absolute rocket into the top corner in front of the cop. I'm not doing it justice. You need to go and see it. But wow, what a goal. His goal returns now, an assist return. I think it's 11-11 for club and country for starts. Now, I know there's a little bit of a disagreement on social media there. I think he's maybe one or two short of that. I go off transfer marks, and I know they're a bit... lucky or a bit generous with some of those assists, but I'm giving him 11-11 starts for club and country. And then the third one, it's Robertson's cross and Gakpo's unmarked in the box to head home. Now, obviously, those goals, especially the McAllister one, sounds brilliant. You want to watch it for yourselves. You probably want to watch the Nunes one as well for yourselves if you've not seen it yet, because it's really funny. But if you're on social media and you can't find it, if you're getting geographically blocked, then use NordVPN. They'll bail you out there. They did for me at the weekend when I wanted to watch Seamus Coleman's comic-line goal for Everton. So use that if you're struggling to find McAllister's goal, because it's well worth a watch on social media. And that brings us nicely to just McAllister. We say it every week at the moment. Wow, what a player. He's stepping up when it really matters, getting goals, getting assists, making the decisive difference. And when Liverpool aren't steamrolling sides, they're not doing what Arsenal were doing a few weeks ago and putting four or five past teams. It's McAllister who's getting them over the line. He is just superb for at the moment, isn't he, Matt?
Yeah, he's been one of Liverpool's best players this season. I think he's been so consistent, whichever position he plays in. He was a little bit deeper, obviously, with Endo not being there tonight, but he still managed to get himself on the score sheet. I think it's 7 goals or assists in his last 6 games for Liverpool, so he's another one that's just stepped up, really, at the perfect moment. And I mean, the goal tonight, it's maybe his best goal. I mean, it's similar almost to the one that he scored against Fulham, where he rockets that one into the top corner. There's a couple of options to choose from, but, you know, at that moment, in front of the cop, it was, you know, very Steven Gerrard-esque, wasn't it? It was just one of those moments, really, that I think if Liverpool do go on and win this title, I think that'll be something that we look back on. And I really do think that Alexis McAllister is right in the conversation, really, for Liverpool's Player of the Year. There's been loads of players who've obviously been consistent and done well, but you know, the obvious candidates, Alisson, Salah, you know, players like that, they've been injured for large spells, where McAllister had a little bit of an injury in December, but aside from that, they've been pretty consistent. Obviously, Virgil van Dijk could be in that conversation as well, but I don't know about you, but I genuinely think that Alexis McAllister's got, you know, not just a shout really for Liverpool's Player of the Season, but right up there in terms of the Premier League as well. I know, obviously, Phil Foden and various others will be in that conversation, but for me, he's performing at the peak of his powers now. I've been surprised how good he's been, but I think Liverpool probably knew that. And week by week, we just see really how much of a bargain they really got.
Yeah, with McAllister, we said it before. When Liverpool first signed him, they inadvertently had to play him as a number 6. And there were question marks about that. You know, why are you doing this? Why can't we just put Trent there or put someone else there, sign someone else? There was always that suspicion as well that Gravenberch might be signed to play as the number 6, and it didn't happen. But it wasn't until Man City away where McAllister made that position his own. You're like, wow, what a signing. There's still question marks about Endo at the time. But then Endo comes in and he's superb. And with them having international duty and both having a couple of injuries, it's taken it until, what, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, to finally get them both in the team together to see one of them in the favourite position as a 6 and then McAllister unleashed as the number 8. And now it's working wonders for Liverpool. He's having such an impact in the attacking third. And think how many times over the last few years have fans complained that there isn't enough from the midfield. I can remember there was one press conference where Jurgen Klopp joked that the one criticism you'd had of my team in the past is the midfield don't score goals. But you can't say that anymore. And it's just becoming more and more right as the season goes on, with them really stepping up. And he's just getting better and better. You run out of superlatives. Like, Phil Foden's probably had a more consistent campaign, but he's just doing what he's always done. Whereas McAllister, he's come to a new club, hasn't he? He's stepped up. He's done it in 2 positions now. He's a World Cup winner. I think it'll come down to who wins the Premier League title. And because it's coming down to the final day of the season, as it stands, he's probably not going to win the players' one, is he? The players will probably vote for Phil Foden. They're getting the votes early. But maybe when it comes to, I don't know, the journalists' one, maybe McAllister gets that late shout. Now, we have got a couple of shout-outs that people want. So, hi, Shane from Ireland. I know you're a regular viewer, aren't you, Shane? So, thanks for tuning again. And hi, Raymond from Uganda. That's a big difference there in location. Tell us where you're tuning in from. Hopefully, the time difference isn't too bad in Uganda. I can't say I'm on top of that. Hopefully, it's not too late for you, Raymond. We have got one comment on the substitution saying they work wonders again. That is basically setting the next point of our agenda because, as much as McAllister was brilliant, it is the substitutions that got the third goal for Liverpool and wrapped up the victory when it could have been a little bit nervy. The Andy Robertson cross, and it is Gakpo who heads it home. But they're not the only ones who deserve credit. I think Curtis Jones came on and he made a real difference. Harvey Elliott as well. We seem to be saying this again, time and time again, week after week this season, how much the substitutions make a difference for Liverpool, how impressive the squad depth is, and the fact that it's come in the face of so many injuries. It makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, and I think Cody Gakpo was probably one of the more impressive of the substitutions. I think Curtis Jones was as well. He looked very sharp. But I think when you consider the form that Gakpo's been in, he's struggled a little bit at times. It's obviously a very short sample size. He wasn't on the pitch for a huge amount of time, but he's got his goal. There was a little dribble where he looked a little bit sharper than what he has in recent times. So I think that can only be a good thing. I think it's only natural that it would be playing on his mind. He'll want to make as big an impact as he can. Liverpool hopefully will have Diogo Jota back within the next couple of weeks as well. So it's just all positive, isn't it, really? You'd look at the bench today, there's a few more recognisable names. I mean, there's still two left-backs on there, which probably isn't the best balance in terms of that sort of thing. But I think generally it's starting to look a little bit better in terms of that injury situation. There's still, you know, a number of players who are out. I mentioned Endo before. I think, you know, he will obviously play a huge part before the end of the season. There's others as well that need to come back still. But I think you suddenly start to look at that Liverpool squad now, and there's, at the right time, you know, maybe a little bit of good fortune coming their way as well. And I think City and Arsenal have got very few injuries. That could be something when you think of how tight the margins are going to be. It could be the case that Diogo Jota comes back and scores a winner for Liverpool, or, you know, whoever it is that steps up at the right time. They've clearly got the squad to go all the way from this position. But I think it can only be, you know, a real positive really for Liverpool that they've managed to get themselves a couple of key boosts really at just the perfect time.
Do a few more shout outs whilst they're coming up on the screen. Got John Paul from Mauritius. He tells us it's nearly 1 a.m. there. Sorry, what, 5 to 10 here in the UK? 1 a.m. Yeah, you really are dedicated, aren't you, watching us two at that time in the morning? Go to bed, mate. Celebrate the win. You don't need to be staying up late on our account. Got a couple from Zimbabwe, from Zambia. Yeah, I'm sure you're all on a high after another marvellous Liverpool victory. Harvey Elliott's here. I think I've already put this one up on screen, but I'll put it up again. He's got some praise after coming off the bench. It's his 21st birthday today, though not in Mauritius. His 21st birthday was yesterday now. But over here in the UK, it is today. He is the birthday boy. You can probably feel a little aggrieved not to have started this one with its Gravenberch, who's got on the nod ahead of him. But he put in another lively cameo. He's just so energetic. He's got a real eye for a pass at the moment. And he said it himself, I think, last week. You forget how young he is. He forgets how young he is because he's been part of this first team squad for so long. But he's the same age as Quanser. He's the same age as Bradley. And he's still one of the more experienced players in this squad. Whoever is the Liverpool manager after Jurgen Klopp, he's going to play a massive part in this side.
I mean, we mentioned Phil Foden before. There's, I think, similarities in terms of, I know Phil Foden didn't go out on loan, but Liverpool this season at least have been a little bit more sparing with his use. He hasn't started as many games as what he has in previous seasons, but I think we are seeing clearly the best of him. He's kicked on another level, or probably two or three levels, to be honest, in terms of his performances this season. Obviously, from the bench is not the role that he will want long-term. I think I was certainly surprised that he didn't start today. I thought he probably would have done. The fact that they did make midfield changes and he wasn't one of them surprised me. But I think Liverpool this season have got the reward, really, in terms of Harvey Elliott. They've used him more sparingly. They've used him in a particular role, that kind of super sub thing. And, you know, he is only just 21, as you say. There's still loads of development and loads of opportunities for him to start games for Liverpool. I think right now, that's probably the most effective that you can use him at. Out of Harvey Elliott is minutes that here and there, or, you know, whatever it might be. It doesn't really matter whether Liverpool need to keep the ball because they've got a lead, whether they need to find another goal. He's just the perfect option, really, to throw on. He's such an intelligent footballer, technically very, very good. But I think you can tell sometimes with certain players that they're just so intelligent that they clearly watch the game when they're on the sidelines. He's clearly very, very focused until he comes onto the pitch. And as soon as he does, he knows exactly where to be, exactly where the spaces are and what he needs to do. And, you know, obviously has the ability as well to be able to execute that. So he was very impressive again. I think, you know, for Liverpool to have Jones, Elliott and Gakpo to come off the bench, I think that, again, speaks to the strength of the squad. And if you're Sheffield United, you've managed to get so far through the game at 1-1, and then you look to the sidelines and those three are coming on. So even though Mohamed Salah came off, which another surprise really in terms of that, you can see why Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp had that trust in the players that they had on the sidelines.
I will touch on Salah in a bit, but Scott's asked us if we can touch on Connor Bradley first. He's unlucky with the own goal. It's across to the far post, isn't it? Then knocked down the header and it goes through his legs and it squirms through Kelleher's legs. Apart from that, he didn't really put a foot wrong. I thought it was a mature performance from him again. He gets forward really well. He's attacking even more when Liverpool are going in search for the second goal. But then as soon as they get the second goal, it's right, let's defend this. Let's see this out. It's only when they got the third, he ventures forward a little bit more. There's a few really dangerous crosses in the first half. A couple a bit wilder as well. That's not a deliberate pun, by the way. But he's always going to be a little bit inconsistent as a young player. But he's another one who is just stepping up when Liverpool need them. And when you've got Trent back in, what, next week, week after? It'll be interesting to see what Jurgen Klopp does with those two, see where they both play, if one of them starts or if it's find a way to get them both in the team. But what have you made of Bradley's form in the side recently? He was unlucky with the own goal, wasn't he? But apart from that, you can't really fault him.
Yeah, I think it was a good performance. Again, there was a couple of moments where he just seems to know where to put his body at the right time. He's not the most physical. He's not the most, tall of players. But I think there was one on Ollie McBurnie when he came on. I think there might have been one in the first half on Brereton Diaz, where he just sort of steps across, eases them out of the way, plays the ball. And obviously, when he's got the ball, he's so composed as well. So I think it was another impressive performance really from him. He's clearly at the level that Liverpool need. He's clearly an option. It will be interesting to see what they do when Trent's back. You'd expect that Trent will come straight back into the team, but I don't think it's necessarily one where, you know, in the past Liverpool might have had a player like Trent and needed to rush him back in because they didn't have a great deal else to choose from. I think, you know, when Trent does come back, it might be a 45 minutes here, maybe an hour there. You know, you can really rotate. The five subs plays into that as well. Liverpool can be really, really careful with him. There's no need to take any risks because they've got a player who, okay, isn't as good as Trent, but he's not a million miles away and he's clearly been able to do the job over the last few weeks.
We'll go on to Salah now and we'll throw Gravenberch in there as well. I think that was substituted just before the hour mark, wasn't it? It was a quiet performance from Salah. I'm not really surprised. Like, he is still feeling his way back from a lengthy layoff through a mixture of international football and injury. That international break is probably the one player it came at the wrong time for, so he's struggling for rhythm. And Gravenberch was the first time we've seen him start since the League Cup final. It was a typical Gravenberch performance, wasn't it, in terms of there were some good moments, some really smart footwork as well, but then he was a bit light in the challenges, losing it at times, and it wasn't a surprise that he came off in the same way it was when Salah did. What did you make of their performances? When you can pick out so many players as playing so well, like a McAllister or a Nunes, those are probably two of the ones that will be lower down in Doyle's player ratings today, won't they?
Yeah, he certainly didn't have as many shots as he had at the weekend, Salah, but I think he was quiet, but it was still a surprise that he took him off. I think it was clearly a pre-planned substitution. I think it was pretty much exactly on the hour mark, so I can see why they've done it. They're clearly managing his fitness. They don't want to take any risks again with him, and they've been proven right. But I think there would have been a few question marks if this had finished 1-1 and they took Salah off. There was a couple of moments where Conor Bradley looked like he might have been playing right wing. They then changed that around and Elliott went there and Bradley went back to fullback. So it took a couple of minutes for them to get used to it, but obviously in the end it worked. And I think with Gravenberch, again, what you said there, that pretty much sums it up. You can't really say much more than it was a typical performance. There was a couple of bits where he was good. I love the fact that he takes the ball on that half turn. There was one at the other end, at the Anfield Road end, where he kind of takes it on the back foot and almost gets a shot away, but doesn't quite do it. There was one where Diaz went past a couple of people and played it to him, and then he just slips before he takes the shot. There's clearly a player in there. It's just a case of, can he do it consistently? And I think we've seen enough flashes to think that there's, you know, another level or two to be unlocked with him. It is just a case of, can he do it every single week? He hasn't managed to do that yet for Liverpool. He will get more opportunities, though. I'd be surprised if he was in the team at the weekend, but there's enough matches to think that he will start. And I suppose what you'd say is if he doesn't start on Sunday at Old Trafford, he's probably going to be in the team for Atalanta next week, I would think. It's one of those, really, where there's going to be loads of games left for Liverpool in terms of playing twice a week. There's going to be minutes on offer. He's got to take his chance at some point, but I think, you know, he's still in his debut season. There's going to be a new manager in the summer. We don't quite know how he's going to fit in with that, but I certainly wouldn't be losing patience with him. That there's still loads of quality there to be unlocked, but I'm sure it will do eventually.
Alan's just said, looking forward to having Jota back. Hopefully he'll be back soon. I think Jota's like Trent. He's 1 or 2 weeks away, back in training, maybe bits of team training next week, looking to return after that, which will be, what, Atalanta at earliest? I can't imagine we're going to see them for Manchester United at this point because they're not back in training yet. But, yeah, we'll just go through the injury. So it is getting a little bit better for Liverpool. I don't think we've heard an update on Endo yet, have we? It was just a knock before the pre-match press conference. And then, obviously, he's not made the squad tonight. Hopefully nothing serious and just a precaution, taking him out of the firing line, because if he's fit, he starts at Old Trafford.
He's only a couple of yellows away from suspension, isn't he, as well? So
No.
Is he not?
No, because today's the threshold.
32 it is, not 30.
I thought it was 30. When did that change?
It's always been 32, I'm pretty sure.
I swear the book said 30. But like we were saying in the group the other day, it was 30. Anyway, what, someone check that. Someone online, check that now. See what how many games it is until you get that other yellow card. Otherwise, Matt can just check it as I go through the injuries. Scott's also said when Stefan Bicetic back, I think... that's the wrong one. Yeah, I think he's the same. He should be back in team training next week. He's been with the under-21s this week. So he's not too far away. Allison's maybe a couple of weeks as well. Like, the injury list isn't as bad as it has been, but the players, they're just on the verge of coming back, so there's none of them actually ready to start games. Like, I was a little bit surprised we saw as much of Curtis Jones tonight as we did. Obviously, we know Joel Matip's out for the season. Thiago, not going to see much of him if he's ever fit to return. Bicetic, a couple of weeks away. He'll be in team training next week. Trent could start team training next week. Thiago, Allison, Jota, the same. Endo, Klopp will be doing his press conference, if not already started, in the next 5-10 minutes. So we'll find out there. Oh, Florian said, Matt's right, 32 games is the threshold. God knows where I got 30 from, because Doyley was saying, I swear it was Doyley, someone was saying in the office this week, that, oh yeah, they're fine after this week. It was just get through this one and no one was suspended for United. But anyway, Endo's not suspended for United because he didn't play. So no one's got those two yellow cards. Nunes didn't get one either because he's the other one who was close, wasn't he? I should have just taken the referee's word for it, shouldn't I?
Both on 8 at this point, I think.
But both on 8. So, yeah, they're doing all right at the moment. And even they did get a suspension for a nothing game. You've got the depth there coming back. Manchester United up next. It's a great time to have a couple of players back from injury. Be interesting to see what Klopp does with the team there. Like Konate, he took a really heavy whack in the second half, didn't he? And it looked like he might be stretched off at one point. But he was fine to carry on. Now, we know Konate's injury past. We know he's not really the sort of player that plays back-to-back too often. They usually manage his minutes. So it will be interesting to see if he can actually play at Old Trafford or if Quansah gets recalled there and gets the nods. But there's a bit more depth there. And it's a game Liverpool have to win. Like, we're going to say this about every single game left this season. Liverpool have to win it. And is it another case? It'll be the last one of the weekend, won't it? I don't think there's a Monday game. So they'll know what the rivals have done again. Even if there is a Monday game, it's not one of the teams in Europe because it's a European week. But yeah, they'll know what their rivals have done when they take to the field. And it's a chance to set off a few scores after that FA Cup defeat a few weeks ago, isn't it?
Yeah, City Palace, isn't it, on Saturday lunchtime, and then Brighton against Arsenal later on that day. So we'll know what the results are there. I'm sure Jurgen Klopp will say it in his press conference tomorrow that, you know, it doesn't really matter what the other teams do. It doesn't really change the job for Liverpool. And I suppose that is technically correct, isn't it? It would be a boost if one of the other teams dropped points, as we mentioned before. But at the same time, even if they did, Liverpool would still need to go to Old Trafford and win. And I think you've just got to hope that they learn the lessons from last time. I think it will be a different game. I'm not quite sure where we're up to with the Manchester United-Chelsea game. I think that was 2-2 earlier on, but obviously I haven't seen a huge amount of that one. But I think that will probably take a fair bit out of the United legs as well. So, yeah, it's a game that Liverpool should win. It feels a bit weird still to say that Liverpool should go away to Manchester United and win. If not comfortably, then certainly go there and win. Yeah, 3-2 to United, I'm being shown at the moment. So, yeah, clearly, you know, a morale-boosting win for them. But again, it does just sort of sum up, really, the chaotic nature of their season. Liverpool, if they are controlled, they're dominant. They've obviously got more players back since they went to Old Trafford 3 weeks ago. I think you've got to be confident going there as much as you can ever be going to Old Trafford.
Well, I've learned two things during our live broadcast today in the post-match podcast, and that is the 32-game threshold. Thanks for that, everyone who is messaging, pointing that out, as well as Matt next to me. And also, that what a global audience we have, from Mauritius to Toronto, loads of African countries like Zimbabwe, Zambia, Ireland, of course, give you all shout-outs. But that means you might have struggled to see some of the Liverpool goals. So once again, NordVPN is the thing to use. It's not even a good way to describe them, is it? It's the place to be if you want to watch those goals again, the highlights again, and you're struggling on social media. It'll be one that I'm sure many of us will be watching again and again and again, that Alexis McAllister goal. I don't think he was up for Premier League Goal of the Month for this month, was he? But he's up for Player of the Month. You'd imagine he's going to be up for the next one. He's probably got April in the bag. I'm not sure if it's as good as the Fulham one. I know you mentioned that earlier, but that's only because when we saw the Fulham one, we had that perfect angle here in the press box, go in the top corner. I'd love to know what the view was in the cop for that behind the strike. If you knew the second he hit it, that it's going top corner. My father, Outlaw, it's not in-law, it's Outlaw. He does sit in the cop, so I'll be messaging him as soon as we come off this to see just how good a goal it was. But from our angle, it was superb. It helped Liverpool get the job done. 3-1, sends them top of the league. There's not really much else to add there, isn't there? Go to the website for Gorski's verdict, Doyle's snap analysis, which I believe will be on McAllister, his player ratings, where I assume McAllister features quite prominently once again, and then of the analysis in the morning. If the press conference hasn't started yet, I'll be racing down and going through that as well. And then tomorrow we'll have your normal Friday Blood Red podcast. All the pre-match build-up to Manchester United continues, and then the rest of the fallout from this one. Thanks for tuning in, wherever you're tuning in from. It's been a bumper post-match podcast here, isn't it? There's so much to get through, so many positives. And at the end of the day, Liverpool are top. We're all happy. If it's 1 o'clock where you are, go to bed. Until next time, thanks and goodbye.